Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty in for Robin Young. It's Here and Now. In a unanimous decision today, the Supreme Court ruled that a human gene cannot be patented. The decision, written by Justice Clarence Thomas, calls genes a product of nature. It's one of the most significant rulings in genetic science in the genetic science industry. The case involved Utah-based Myriad Genetics, which held a patent related to two genes, BRCA1 and BRCA2, the genes which can indicate a higher risk of breast and ovarian cancer. They're the same genes that actress Angelina Jolie has, and you'll remember that earlier this year she announced that she had a preventive double mastectomy in order to reduce her chance of breast cancer. Now, in a moment, we'll hear from one of the plaintiffs in the case as well as a lawyer from Myriad Genetics. But first, we turn to Emily Bazelon, legal affairs editor for Slate, who joins us from the studios at Yale University. Emily, explain this ruling to us. What exactly was the reasoning behind the court saying that genes cannot be patented?
You know, this is a beautifully simple opinion. It was such a pleasure to read. And it's very common sense. Basically, if you find something in nature and you don't do anything to it other than discover it, you don't get to own it. You can't have a patent of it. In other words, there's no active invention in the pure discovery because you're not changing the gene in any way, and that's not enough for a patent.
Okay, well, so the question now, though, is what is natural versus what is artificial? Because the biotech industry is very, very sophisticated. You know, you make one or two minor changes in a gene, is that then suddenly artificial?
Well, the court said that you can patent synthetic DNA. In other words, DNA that's been altered in some way. And Justice Thomas, who wrote the opinion for a unanimous court, really took pains, I think, to reassure the biotech industry that if it goes in and alters things or applies new knowledge or in some other way really offers up an invention as well as simply the act of picking something out of nature, all of those things could still be patentable.
Okay, so in that case, do you think that does this sort of establish the precedent that's going to inform every other potential case about genetic patenting going forward? Or is there enough wiggle room that we might see future cases make their way up the judicial system?
Oh, I'm sure future cases will come. There are 3,000 patents, I think, of naturally discoverable material out there. And so the first tasks for the lower courts will be to figure out, okay, are those patents just like or enough like Myriad Genetics' patent that they're not allowed anymore? Or is there something else, some active invention going on in them that makes them different? That will be the next kind of road that the courts will take and that will have big implications for the biotech industry.
Okay, so you said that you reminded us that this decision was written by Justice Clarence Thomas. It's a unanimous one, 9-0. We don't see that very often. So what's the significance of the fact that all the justices ruled the same way?
You know, Meghna, we do actually see a strong minority of unanimous decisions. They're just not usually about the cases anyone pays attention to because they're not controversial. I think this one was unanimous because it's such a common sense ruling. There's just something really strange about the breadth of the patent that Myriad Genetics was asserting here. The idea that you can pluck something out of nature, something that's in all of our DNA, and say that one company owns it, and then that only one company can perform the tests for breast cancer and ovarian cancer that are associated with these genes.
Well, Emily, stand by with us for a moment because I'd like to turn to one of the plaintiffs in the case, Lizbeth Siriani. She joins us in the studio. And Lizbeth, the Supreme Court, as we just heard, handed you a victory. What's your reaction?
I'm so relieved. I'm so relieved that after, you know, such a long process that the final decision has been the right decision and our genes are no longer being held hostage by a private company.
You got involved in this case after you were diagnosed with breast cancer 5 years ago.
Yes.
And you needed to find out if you had the breast cancer gene because you wanted to know if you were at increased risk of ovarian cancer as well because the gene is an indicator of that.
Exactly. My oncologist suggested the type of breast cancer I had was indicative of a genetic mutation, and I didn't know of any family history at the time, and she suggested that I get a BRCA analysis to check for a mutation. I immediately went to a genetic counselor to access the test and was told initially incorrectly my insurance wouldn't cover it, and upon further investigation found my insurance would cover it if the lab was a contract provider with my insurance. went back to the genetic counselor, they said, yes, but Myriad's choosing not to contract with your insurance. So you still can't access the test unless you want to pay for it out of your pocket.
And could you afford to do that?
For all of the different types of tests involved in getting a comprehensive BRCA1 and 2 analysis, it would have been close to $4,000 to get the BRCA analysis and their BART rearrangement tests, which was not possible at that time after going through a year and a half of going through a year of treatment.
So I understand that eventually you were able to get the test due to a grant?
Yes, okay. I was finally able to access the test due to a grant. 200 test kits had been gifted to Massachusetts for women that kind of fit my criteria with my type of insurance.
And the result of that was that you
turned out
you
I did
have
what they defined as a rare mutation, which must have come through my father's side, actually.
Mm-hmm. And so you had your ovaries removed as a preventative measure.
Yeah, there was no good effective screening tools for ovarian cancer, and the risk was 80%.
Well, Elizabeth, I guess I wonder, I mean, I hear your story, but Myriad, you know, the company that wanted to patent the gene, it basically makes the argument that in the future, they see rulings like this as suppressing the development of more testing because of the lack of patent protection.
That's crazy. They can patent their tests. They were patenting the actual gene so that no other doctor or researcher was allowed to look at my gene out of my body except for the folks at Myriad. Now they can go on to develop all sorts of different tests to test the same gene and find out different therapies using that gene that they were not allowed to do for the past decade while the patents were in place.
Well, Lizbeth Siriani is one of the plaintiffs in the case that the Supreme Court decided today about patenting human genes. Lizbeth, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, let's turn now to the other side of this case. Greg Castañas is a partner at Jones Day and was part of the Myriad legal team. Greg, first of all, can you just respond to what Lizbeth just said, that, you know, regardless of this ruling, Myriad can still make money off its patents that for the tests that it develops? And so why do you need a patent for the genes? You've still got the tests.
Well, let's start. First of all, good afternoon, and let's start by saying that we actually agree a lot with what Ms. Siriani just told you. Myriad does have, in fact, patents on a number of the diagnostic tests, and those were either upheld or not at stake in the Supreme Court's ruling today. What I think it's important to understand about what the Supreme Court ruled today is it ruled that only five patent claims out of well over 500 patent claims that Myriad has directed to the BRCA analysis test that it offers were struck down by the Supreme Court as being so-called products of nature. Four other claims that Ms. Siriani's lawyers had challenged, which were directed to what's called complementary DNA, which is DNA that has been created in the laboratory and has what are called the introns removed, are eligible for patenting.
Okay.
So even those patent claims survive.
I take your point on that, but let's just drive to the fundamental question here, as Justice Thomas wrote in today's decision, that genes that occur in nature, that were created by nature and not by a lab, not by a biotech company, those genes that were merely sequenced by a biotech company, why on earth should a corporation or a company have any patent protection over that?
Well, obviously, we're disappointed in that aspect of the ruling, but at the same time, we also think that what the court did in making that ruling was to not appreciate either the inventive process or the contribution that Myriad's inventors made to society. And I think the notion is somehow or another that these claims to isolated DNA are somehow or another claiming DNA that is in our body. And that's certainly the way Justice Thomas's opinion looked at it. In truth, though, these molecules were actually created in the lab just like the cDNA. And in fact, the patent-eligible cDNA was the starting point for creating those molecules. And once they were created in the laboratory, then it was found that they match up to a certain aspect of the genome in a patient who does not have mutations. And that is exactly what allows them to be used as these diagnostic tools.
Right.
That said, as I mentioned earlier, the today's decision is ultimately, I think, one that I think Ms. Siriani can take great great pleasure in the invalidating of five of Myriad's patent claims, but I think the both Myriad specifically and the biotechnology industry in general breathes a huge sigh of relief because not only did the court recognize that even the claims that were invalidated represented a breakthrough, that's quoting the Supreme Court's decision, not only was it a breakthrough, but that also that all of these other things, like Ms. Sirianni mentioned,
right.
These methods, these diagnostic tests, will still be eligible for patenting and still be the subject of inventions that can be protected by the patent laws.
Well, Greg Castagnas, I'm afraid I'm going to have to stop our conversation there, but Greg Castagnas is partner at Jones Day and was part of the Myriad legal team. Thank you so much for your time. Let's turn back now to Emily Bazelon at Slate. And Emily, react to what you just heard Greg Castagnas say there, that, you know, even though Myriad essentially lost this case, they're still seeing it as a victory for the biotech industry.
To me, it sounded like spin in terms of Myriad's own role here. You know, from talking to scientists and also from women who have worried about these tests, my sense is that Myriad really aggressively enforced this patent. Other entities were offering tests, trying to do research. There was some research that happened, but anyone who offered the test got a letter. You know, threatening a lawsuit. And when you aggressively enforce a patent in an area in which there's ongoing research, in which scientists are really trying to do their best to make discoveries that are going to further gains in women's health, and especially when you do that in a way where your own constituency that you're selling the test to and giving it to gets really angry, because that's what happened with the women's health groups, that's going to get you into trouble. And I think that's what we see in this litigation, as well as the Supreme Court drawing this very sensible line between patenting DNA that has been altered and changed and invented in some way, and DNA that simply occurs in nature.
Well, Emily, we've just got a couple seconds to go here, but there are a lot of people out there in the world of science and research and in the biotech industry who do wonder, who will look at this and say, does the court give us enough room to continue to do our research such that we can, in the future, profit from it? Do you think the court allowed that? You know, didn't have a chilling effect as some people had worried that it might?
I think the opinion is written in a very careful way to avoid that chilling effect. It ends with Justice Thomas carefully limiting it and saying, look, if you're applying new knowledge to naturally occurring DNA, if you're using it in a new way, yes, you can still patent that. And so I think the biotech industry probably will breathe a sigh of relief, but this is also a real rebuke to Myriad Genetics and its aggressive enforcement.
Well, Emily Bazelon is legal affairs editor for Slate. Emily, thank you so much as always.
Thanks so much for having me.
And listeners, this is a big decision about the world of genes and biotech. Let us know what you think at hereandnow.org. Back in a minute, Here and Now.